Well, good morning. So good to see all of you here this morning. I have become more and more of a West Michigan native with every passing day. This past week, I now officially, I don't have it in person, but I have my Michigan driver's license number, and the driver's license itself will be coming. I'm excited about that. So now my hair can match my driver's license instead of everybody looking at me. Got a Michigan license plate on my Subaru, which I've got to say looks really good on there. So if you see the orange Subaru around town with the kayaks on the roof and the nice blue winter and water wonderland plate, it felt really good. I told the lady at the Secretary of State, she didn't find it quite as interesting as I did, but I said, you know what? I said, it's been almost 20 years since I've had a Michigan plate on my car. And it's pretty cool to put it back on there again. And then yesterday, I was going to do some kayaking, and then because of the red flag warning. Anybody see the water yesterday? You go out to the water? It was so cool. So we went out to Holland State Park, and instead I got my kite out. And it is sport kiting, not knitting. Although, with everything you're seeing in the Olympics, I give it time. You will see sport knitting one day. It's going to happen. But I got my kite out yesterday, and man, was that a blast. I have a nice long 75-foot tail, and it's a two-line sport kite. So red flag days are not good days to be in the water, but they're great days to fly a kite. So I had a lot of fun, and I'm feeling more and more West Michigan all the time. So it's a lot of fun. We're in this topic, this theme about unfolding. And I wanted to explore this idea or this theme about who we become as we unfold. In 2003, some of you may have seen this documentary that was, I believe it's on HBO. It was called The Inventor. In 2003, rising star Elizabeth Holmes dropped out of Stanford University and founded a blood testing startup called Theranos. What made Theranos unique was that they supposedly could perform hundreds of blood tests with just a few drops of blood. And anybody who comes from the healthcare background realizes right off the bat the difficulties with trying to do such a thing. And yet, Elizabeth Holmes was able to convince some extremely smart people, among them billionaires Rupert Murdoch, Larry Ellison, and even the DeVos family, to invest. There's some chuckles in there. They invested. Theranos was worth $700 million, or they received $700 million from investors. And in 2014, when she was just 30 years old, Forbes named Holmes the world's youngest self-made female billionaire with a worth of $4.5 billion. That was in 2014. By 2015, after that investigative report came out of the Wall Street Journal, Forbes had to update that net worth back down to zero. Isn't it strange how the image that we present to the world can change and shift so dramatically? Now, what Elizabeth Holmes reflected was the maxim of Silicon Valley, which is fake it till you make it. That's been the motto of many, especially tech startups, here in our capitalist-driven economy. Fake it till you make it. And there's some understanding behind why people like an Elizabeth Holmes would do the things that she did because of all the investors. But what does it look like when we have this fake persona that we portray to the world, to our friends, to everybody else? You see, when our life is unfolding, there is this tendency about the process of unfolding to think that perhaps our life should have maybe unfolded slightly different than it did. And maybe that belief that we think that things should have transpired differently leads us to begin living our lives as if they did. We have this disingenuous disconnect between who we actually are and the version of ourselves that everybody else sees of us. We maintain this image of who we think we should be. Psychotherapist Kathy Ingram says, the idea of, quote, making it or being perceived as a success, especially in our culture, and especially within the business world, this is especially true for females in the business world. So I want to, on the one hand, not throw Elizabeth Holmes under the bus because the idea of what a female trying to raise money and investments for is not something that I understand. But there is this idea of this image that we portray and wanting to be successful or wanting to be together, to have our stuff together. She says, the idea of making it or being perceived as a success in the eyes of others can become an unrealistic goal, always out of reach. Our self-image is at odds with our lived experience. We often end up valuing our own worth through external evaluation against a specific set of criteria dictated by our family, by our cultures, or our society. Our concepts of wealth or prestige or success may have more to do with the views of others than our own internal evaluation. You see, when life unfolds, life doesn't unfold in the ways that we think it does because it's life. And that's the beauty of it. And along the way, we're going to mess up. We're going to make the wrong choices. We're going to do the wrong thing. And here's what I would challenge you to think. That when you're thinking about the parts of your life that are maybe the parts of the story that you kind of save for last, you kind of shuffle that to the end of the book, those mistakes, those darker moments, those things about you are perhaps some of the most interesting things. And it's through those cracks that the light can shine through that can affect other people. So here's what I would say to a room that is predominantly filled with people whose lived experience is more in the rearview mirror than perhaps what's ahead. Is one way to say that. Statistically speaking. Hey, I've told Lisa that I'm planning on living to 120, so you can set your high goal wherever you want. But here's the deal. We have a lot of stories in this room. We have a lot of mistakes. And we also have a world and a culture and people coming up who are looking for what it means to be authentic, what it means to be real, to own this. Brené Brown is perhaps one of the best speakers and teachers and writers who talks about authenticity. So, of course, I'm going to quote from her first book, The Gifts of Imperfection. And she says that authenticity is this daily practice of letting go of who we think we're supposed to be and embracing who we are. And that's easy to say, and gosh darn, is that hard to do. Because maybe you recognize that voice in your head that is always so hard on you for not living up to these expectations that you have of yourself. Brené says, choosing authenticity means cultivating the courage to be imperfect, to set boundaries, to allow ourselves to be vulnerable. We talked a little bit in pre-talk, and it's important to note here that vulnerability, authenticity, honesty, is a privilege that we offer others. You don't owe others insight into your life, and this is something that must be done within the boundaries of trust and mutual respect. Authenticity demands wholehearted living and loving, even when it's hard, even when we're wrestling with the shame and the fear of not being good enough, and especially when the joy is so intense that we're afraid to let ourselves feel it. Mindfully practicing authenticity during our most soul-searching struggles is how we invite grace, joy, and gratitude into our lives. We don't like the idea of revealing or showing aspects of our authentic self. I'd like to think that the standards that I set for myself when it comes to communicating with my wife, with my kids, I'd like to think that I more often than not live up to it. But the reality is we go through life and we do things that we regret. And there are things that are part of our nature because we're human that we would rather not let other people know about. But I'll tell you this, coming from an evangelical culture and coming from a Christian culture who has turned this idea of presenting a version of ourselves to the world into an art form, why do you think that so many pastors, why is it that we don't even raise an eyebrow when we see yet another headline about a pastor being caught with child pornography or with affairs or all these things? Because there is no space for this type of open-hearted living. So we have the opportunity to do that. But it's not easy. It's really not. The reality is, those rose-colored glasses that Charity have, we want other people to see us with those rose-colored glasses. As a matter of fact, we will put those glasses on for them because we look better. I'm going to challenge you that the view of you without the rose-colored glasses on is the view of you that the world most needs to see. And especially within this community, the people that you invite into your life, we need the people in our lives that we can be authentic, that we can be real. Because this fake it culture that we live in is tough, but it's especially tough for those in culture who identify as people pleasers. Do we have any self-identifying people pleasers in the room? If I tell you to raise your hand, will you raise your hand? It's hard because some of us have turned people-pleasing into this adaptive skill because it served a very necessary purpose for us, possibly in growing up, in our younger years. There was some part of ourselves that realized that if they knew the real me, they wouldn't like the real me. And so we curate this version of ourselves that is palatable for those around us. Some of us take it so far that we have made this image that is almost unrecognizable to the point where we don't remember the real self behind all the layers, all the masks that we wear. The reality is that we present oftentimes the opposite of our fears. So if you're a people pleaser, or if you're worried about or have grown up in such a way where you're worried about this image that you're curating, and if your deepest fear is that you are undesirable, that you're unwanted or unlikable, then every action you do is going to be in contrast to that. We present oftentimes opposite of our fears. What I want to challenge you with this morning is to spend some time reflecting on the things that we hide and ask ourselves, why do we hide them? What is it that drives us in this culture to be so together? What is it that we try to do? Why is it that we try to live this version of ourselves that is so exhausting to maintain? The Jenna and Jesse song, I love that because artists, more often than not, are able to put words and music to things that are these really complicated concepts there. I love that song about being paralyzed by these terrible lies. And we find ourselves like that at times, with family, with friends, in a community, paralyzed by this version of ourselves that we're trying to maintain. There's a quote from a book I was reading this week called In Praise of Shadows. A lot of this talk comes out of specifically some very Japanese ideas because the Eastern mindset in terms of authenticity and honor is very, very different from our Western idealized mindsets. And Junichiro Tanizaki, in his book, In Praise of Shadows, he describes the difference between the Eastern and the Western cultures this way. He said, we Orientals tend to seek our satisfactions in whatever surroundings we happen to find ourselves, to content ourselves with things as they are. And so darkness causes us no discontent. We resign ourselves to it as inevitable. If light is scarce, then light is scarce. We will immerse ourselves in the darkness and there discover its own particular beauty. But the progressive Westerner is determined always to better his lot. From candle to oil lamp to gaslight to electric light. His quest for a brighter light never ceases. He spares no pains to eradicate even the minutest shadow. The quality that we call beauty must always grow from the realities of life. We think that what we're trying to do is cultivate a more beautiful version of ourselves. And we can delude ourselves into thinking that. If you want a very real and practical demonstration of people who have fallen under these delusions, browse some of the galleries of people who have become addicted to plastic surgery. The lengths to which we will go. What started out as fixing a crooked nose and lifting this brow soon changes us into a version of ourselves that becomes unrecognizable. And there are those who it becomes this maladaptive strategy and they begin to fall under this delusion that they are making themselves more attractive, more appealing, while losing sight of the fact that nobody around them recognizes them. That's the extreme version physically of what we tend to do with our lives. And when I say we, I absolutely mean me. Because in new communities, it's very, very tempting for me to present my best self without all of my hang-ups, without all of my shortcomings. It's very, very easy for me to talk about the areas where I've done something well. It's a lot harder to talk about things where we've messed up. But I would challenge you in this, that your failures, your mistakes are probably some of the most interesting things about you. And it's from those places that some stories of transformation are waiting to be told. I want to wrap up with this other Japanese word, this idea. You've perhaps heard of it because it's kind of become bastardized in our Western culture. There's a lot of versions of this out there. So if you Google it, you'll see lots of things that claim to be wabi-sabi but aren't. But wabi-sabi within the Japanese culture, if you read back on some of the original ideas in terms of how it came about, there was this tea ceremony that had become so in-depth, so beautiful, so ornate, that others could not feel like they could acquire that same sense of tea house. And so this Japanese tea master came along with this idea of incorporating natural beauty and the celebration of things that fall down and fall apart, the entropy of life. And this idea became birthed in this contradiction of these two Japanese words, wabi and sabi. Wabi is about recognizing the beauty in the humble, the simple, in rocks, in rough-hewn wood, in a block of concrete. It invites us to open our heart and to detach from the vanity of materialism so that we can experience richness instead. That's this word wabi. Sabi is concerned with the passage of time, the way things grow, age, decay, and how it manifests itself beautifully in objects. It suggests that beauty is hidden beneath the surface of what we actually see, even in what we perceive as broken. It's this idea, like Ken Wilber talks about, of transcending and including. As we grow, we change. When I'm talking about presenting this authentic version of you, there is nothing more authentic than who you are right now. And that means that for some, it's embracing the reality of where you're at in life. It means being honest with yourself and with others. For some, it means starting to set good boundaries to be able to say no when they can't do any more. It means recognizing the tendencies as people pleasers to do things at the expense of your own happiness and well-being to please others. But this wabi-sabi approach celebrates the beauty in the broken. It celebrates the authentic experience of life through simple things. Some of the best examples of wabi-sabi, if you look, would include perhaps like a wooden or stone pot, not ornate, and maybe from there would be a branch and maybe a dried or falling leaf. It could be a small little plate of gravel with a simple, not pretty, but just an ordinary stone. It shifts these ideas of what we think of as beautiful from perfection and brightness and light and making everything better, 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 to recognizing that the most beautiful version of yourself is who you are in this moment with all of the flaws, all of the faults, everything on display. That's a thing of beauty. And wabi-sabi celebrates that the wabi part of it means that the things in your life that you think of as ordinary have an inner depth and beauty that needs to be shared. And the sabi means that this part of you that is breaking down and dying, this part of you that is failing and frail, this part of you that maybe you're embarrassed about that is not the same as what it used to be 10 or 20 years ago. That sabi is celebrating the ongoing unfolding of life in all of its beauty, all of its complexity. There's beauty in the birth and there's beauty in the dying. To everything, there's a season, time for everything under heaven. There's beauty in laughing with friends and there's beauty in crying with friends. The whole of the experience is what our world needs. From his book there, Wabi Sabi, beauty can be coaxed out of ugliness. Wabi-sabi is ambivalent about separating beauty from non-beauty or ugliness. The beauty of wabi-sabi is, in one respect, the condition of coming to terms with what you consider ugly. When you're looking at the mirror of your heart and you're confronted with who you are, maybe after you lost your temper, maybe after you've said that thing that you regretted, maybe as you're contemplating that relationship that was destroyed because of your foolish outbursts, as you contemplate all of those things, wabi-sabi says that this condition means that you embrace the beauty in even the broken pieces of your life, especially the broken pieces of your life. I'll leave you with this last quote here from Omar Attani. No palm tree is perfectly shaped, yet we marvel at the beauty with which it stands. No seashell is perfectly drawn, and yet we marvel at the beauty with which it curves. Accept and appreciate yourself as you are today, in your natural state, just like you would a tree in a forest. Anybody hug a tree this week? Oh, we got some tree huggers in the house. I love it. Somebody even showed me a picture beforehand. the reason why these things go so well together is because we appreciate trees in nature not because of their symmetry, but because they're so beautifully different. Your beauty is not within your perfection. Your beauty is within your brokenness. Your story has value. You matter. And there are so many people in this world who need to hear your stories of brokenness. Appreciate yourself as you are today in your natural state, just as you would a tree in the forest, a flower in the garden, or a seashell by the shore. You are the entirety of you. You are whole and you are beautiful. Thank you for sharing this planet and this time with me this morning. Namaste.